From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, sitting in for Terry Gross.
Oh, and I'm the type of guy who will never settle down. Where pretty girls are, well, you know that I'm around. I kiss them and I...
Singer-songwriter Dion is a former teen idol of the 1950s from the Bronx who's still singing and playing great music. Now he has a new CD of acoustic blues called Bronx and Blue. We'll listen back to the interview and performance that led to his new recording. Also, critic-at-large John Powers has some thoughts on the new film, Brokeback Mountain. That's all coming up on Fresh Air.
And Janie is the girl, well, that I'll be with tonight. And when she asks me which one I love the best, I tear over my shirt and I show a rosy on my chest, cause I'm a wanderer. Yeah, a wanderer.
First, the news. This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, filling in for Terry Gross. If you've ever thought of Dion as just a former teen idol from the Bronx whose talent or relevance didn't survive the oldies era, what you're about to hear may change your mind. He's a great singer and a terrific guitar player as well, deeply influenced by the blues and country music, which you'll hear on his new solo CD, Bronx and Blue. It's a collection of songs by Willie Dixon, Jimmy Rogers, Lightnin' Hopkins, Jimmy Reed, Hank Williams, and this one by Robert Johnson.
I woke up this morning looking round for my shoes. Some telling me I got to go walking blues. I woke up this morning looking round for my shoes, child. Yeah, some telling me, little girl, I got to go walking blues. You know it. Foot run to the ocean, ocean, two run to the sea. If I don't find my baby, come bury me. Foot run to the ocean, ocean, do run to the sea. Yeah, and if I don't find my baby, oh, little girl, come bury me. You know, and I'm leaving this morning if I have to ride the blind, but I've been mistreated, don't mind dying. Leaving this morning if I have to ride the blind. Oh, I've been mistreated, I don't mind dying. I'm still my walking, got the walking blues.
Dion told the New York Times that even though other musicians had urged him to record a blues album, he never took the notion seriously. But record producer Richard Goddard convinced Dion to give it a shot after hearing him perform some of his favorite blues and country songs during an interview with Terry Gross on Fresh Air. We're about to hear that interview and performance, recorded 5 years ago. The occasion was Dion's CD, Deja Nu, which included a couple of songs written by Bruce Springsteen. Springsteen is one of Dion's fans. In fact, he gave the introduction when Dion was inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1989. This Springsteen song is called If I Should Fall Behind.
We said we'd walk together, baby, come with me. That come the twilight, should we lose our way? If as we were walking, our hand should slip free, I'll wait for you. Should I fall behind, wait for me. We swore that we would travel, darling, side by side, and we help each other to stay in stride. But each lover's step falls so differently. Girl, I'll wait for you. If I should fall behind, wait for me. Now everyone dreams of a love lasting and true.
Dion, welcome to Fresh Air.
Good to be here.
What's it been like for you finding new material? I think a lot of people, when they think of your songs, they think of the songs you did when you were very young that were, some of them, very explicitly teenage songs, like Teenager in Love, or even The Wanderer. It's a song about... it's a song of a young man who in some ways is real hot stuff. So, you're not a teenager anymore, and the song that we just heard is a real adult song. Has it been difficult for you to find songs that reach your audience that you like and that are adult songs?
Well, I don't know. Songs to me have always been kind of like a diary. You know, say when I did Teenager in Love, maybe I was 16. Those questions in that song, even though it's a very simple song, and it seems like kind of claptrap or something, but it's not. To the unknowing ear, it would seem, you know, if you just listen to the surface of it, but it had a lot of heart, it had a lot of soul, and it asks some relevant questions that you could ask today, you know, and songs like I Wonder Why, it was the first hit record I had, you know, we didn't know how to write lyrics too good, but so we invented this kind of percussive rhythmic sound, you know, we'd make up these sounds, we'd go down to the Apollo Theater and hear the horn players, and we'd come back to the neighborhood and give the vocal group, I'd recruit guys and say, do this, do that, you know, and I'd try to get them to sound like the horn section down at the Apollo Theater. Like a song like Ruby Baby, I would, you know, I love a girl in a ruby, yes, her name. I have to go, Ruby, Ruby, Ruby Baby. It was like, they were like horns, you know. And all that stuff was arranged, you know. The group was a poor man's horn section on the street corners. That's what it was. Even when I did Run Around Sue, and they would, hey, hey, that was a horn section that I heard at the Apollo Theater. I just brought it back to the streets and gave it to the guys to sing.
Let me go back to the beginning with you, when you were first listening to music. You wrote in your autobiography that Hank Williams really influenced you early on. When you were a kid, growing up in the Bronx, what did you hear in Hank Williams?
Well, Hank Williams seemed like so total to me, so committed to the lyric. He would actually rip the ends of the words off at the, you know, the end of the sentence. It sounded like he'd bite into the word and rip it off. You know, he would do like, well, I can't sing like him, but the kind of idea, like the first song I heard him do was like, yeah, and I left my home down on the rural route. Told my pa I was going to step in down and get the honky-tonk blues. Yeah, the honky-tonk blues. Well, Lord, I got the honky-tonk blues. You know, he said, I'd stop into every place in town. And he'd rip the word right off like, I got it, and there it goes, you know. And he was totally committed, physically, lyrically, musically, spiritually. I just said, what's this guy talking about? You know, just. And see, I had a guy on the streets that really helped me out a lot, too. There was a guy in Bronx, New York City. His name was Willie Green. And he was the superintendent of a tenement building in my neighborhood. And and you know, basically, what I do is like black music filtered through an Italian neighborhood comes out with an attitude, yo. So Willie Green would be playing me all this John Lee Hooker stuff, and you know, Sonny Boy Williamson. And he'd be playing like. Going down the road, stop it, Fannie Mae. Tell my baby what I heard her boyfriend say. Don't stop me talking. Why, Lord, tell everything I know. I'm gonna break up and signify. Why, Lord, Jack, and some people got to go. Jack gave his wife $5, go downtown, get some, you know, he'd do stuff like that, or, yeah, and I woke up this morning, round for my shoes. Yeah. Some telling me, child, got dudes on walking blue. Yeah, woke up this morning, looking around for my shoes, child. You know I live this morning, child, now the days are walking blue. Some people tell me that their worried blues ain't bad, that
Where's Sophie and her mom? Ever care, son? People tell me that they were in blue, they ain't better, no. Oh, but did the world so feel and I'm on every cage, yeah, no, no, no. And I'm a walking, walking blues, got their walk. You know, he'd do stuff like that. So I'd go into the studio and do the white version of that.
Well, no, really, but it sounds like what I'm hearing from you is that you heard country music through Hank Williams. You heard all these blues recordings.
Right.
And what you found was this kind of
and
Bronx version.
And a little doo-wop.
Yeah, that doo-wop was that for you. This really, yeah. Like for you, native version of all the music that you were loving.
Right, it kind of...
But it was authentic because it was your music. You weren't just doing stuff in the manner of somebody else.
Well, Willie Green, again, the guy who was doing this, he told me, he said, Dion, he said, write about the people in the neighborhood. Write about the things you know. And to me, when I looked around my neighborhood, we had characters like Frankie Yunk Yunk, Joe Beebe Eyes, Ralphie Moach. There was a guy in my neighborhood, they called him Shakespeare. He used to say, like, to be or not to be, which is my apartment? I thought I'd get you with that, Terry. But we had a lot of characters, you know, so, and they seemed bigger than life. Like the Wanderer, his name was Jackie Burns. He was a sailor who got tattoos all over him, you know. And every time he'd date a girl, he'd get a name tattooed on his body, you know. This guy was like, you know, Flow on my left arm, Mary on my right, Janie is a girl I'll be with tonight. Little girl asked me which one I love the best. I tear open my shirt, I show Rosie on my chest. I'm a wanderer, yeah, I'm the wanderer. I roam around, 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 around. Play that thing every year now. But this guy would walk around with his tank top on with all these names all over, you know.
Before you started listening to rhythm and blues and blues music and stuff like that, I know when you were 11, you used to sing in a bar in your neighborhood, and it sounded like you were a real local attraction. What did you sing when you were 11?
Ah, yeah. I would do, I knew 70 Hank Williams songs. Would you believe that? I would even sing his Luke the Drifter series. You know, in the world's mighty gallery of pictures hang the scenes that are painted from life. I was like 13 years old. I thought I was a philosopher. I didn't even know what I was singing about. I sang Honky Tonk Blues. I sang Jambalaya. If you, an Italian from the Bronx, I had no idea what jambalaya meant. But it sounded so good and felt so good coming out of my mouth, you know. Goodbye, Joe, me gotta go, me oh my oh. You know, jambalaya, crawfish pie, and a filly gumbo. I didn't know what gumbo was. I knew what rigatoni was, but gumbo, I had no idea. And, you know, I got caught up in this music, and I guess it's like anybody else when you get caught up into something. It just took me away.
Why don't we pause here and listen to the first Dion and the Belmonts recording, which is I Wonder Why, with those great harmonies.
That's a good attitude song.
Yeah. Let's hear it. And what year is this, Dion?
This is 57, beginning.
And you were how old?
I was 17.
Okay, let's hear it.
Now I love you like I do. Now I do. Don't know why I love you. Don't know why I care. I just want your love to share. I wonder why I love you like I do. Is it because I think you love me too? I wonder why I love you like I do.
That was former teen idol Dion speaking with Terry Gross. He has a new album of acoustic blues called Bronx in Blue. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air.
You got me running, got me hiding, got me running, I'm running.
Let's get back to Terry's interview with the singer Dion, recorded in the year 2000.
Your singing now is really similar to what it's always been. I think some of the material has changed, but I think your singing still has everything in it that you've been talking about, all those influences, the urgency that you've been talking about. So let me play a song, but before I do, I want you to introduce it for us. And this is called Every Day That I'm With You. Tell us about writing this. What inspired it?
Well, I traveled with Buddy Holly and Richie Valens on that tour. We were co-headlining a tour, and we were on this little yellow school bus, not one of these luxury line custom-made coaches today. It was just a yellow school bus. We were riding through the Midwest in 1959, February of 1959. It was cold. It was like 30 below zero. We were freezing. But we really kind of bonded on this tour, Richie, Buddy, and myself, because we had the first Fender guitars that were issued, these new Stratocasters, and we were in a kind of a competition to see who would make them ring the longest. And 2 weeks into the tour, Buddy got kind of fed up with the bus breaking down, and he was trying to recruit people. He chartered a plane. And he said, because the more people you get aboard, the less it would cost. So he said, you know, it'll be $36, he tells me. And he hit the magic number for me. I grew up with my parents screaming and yelling at each other for the rent in Bronx, New York City at the time was $36. So my mind hadn't stretched out to that place where I could spend the whole month's rent on a 45-minute plane flight to Fargo, North Dakota. So I said, no. I've always wanted to express this relationship that, you know, that I pondered at times or reflected on at times that I had with Buddy Holly, and it came out in this song.
And I just want to say for our listeners who don't know the end of the story that Buddy Holly took this plane that you decided not to take. The plane crashed, killing Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and the Big Bopper.
Right.
How did it change your life to know that you came just like an inch away from dying in that plane crash with him? I mean, that's got to give you pause and make you think that every day is a kind of gift after that.
Well, in some kind, I was 19 years old when that happened, and the rug was ripped out from under me. I was in shock. In fact, when I got home, my girlfriend, who's been my wife all these years, at the time, she was my girlfriend. She said, you were in shock for like 2 weeks. You stayed in a room singing Buddy Holly and Richie Valens songs. But I think, you know, at that age, basically, I was baffled because this was the best thing that ever happened to me, being on tour with these guys, running around the country singing rock and roll. I was like, you know, I felt like, wow, what a good thing this is. You know, what fun, what, you know... you know, seeing the world, new friends, you know, there was nothing like it. And then all of a sudden, I'm wondering, what's this about? Where am I going? Why am I here? Who am I? What, you know, I'm starting to ask questions that I really, they're probably floating around your head, but you don't, you know, they're not clear. But I knew God had a plan for my life right then, but I started thinking on a higher reality, you know, after that. I started seeking, like, truth and freedom and God and, you know, what's this about? You know, why are we here? And that's been a journey for me, and it's been a wonderful journey.
Did you fly much after that?
I flew home. I wanted to get, for some reason, I knew I had to get over it right away, so I flew home. And, but a lot of things weren't worked out, because when I got back to the Bronx, There was no one that said, what are your feelings about the, They went, hey, an O came into our neighborhood the other day. We're going to kick his teeth out. Are you coming with us or not? You know, and that was that. I mean, nobody cared. You know, I was out in the Midwest like alone, you know. So I never really put a lot of these questions, you know, a lot of these things to rest. I had to go off alone to, like, you know, work them out, you know.
We'll hear more of our interview and performance with Dion in the second half of the show. I'm Dave Davies, and this is Fresh Air. Here's the song Dion was just telling Terry about.
Every day I step down trouble. Heaven knows it's what I do. Every day I raise my fist for the struggle. Every day that I'm with you. Every day I wake up hungry. Yeah, and I try to get my fill.
Support for NPR comes from Barnes & Noble, publishers of the Barnes & Noble Classics edition of Franz Kafka's Metamorphosis, available in stores and online at bn.com. From Universal Pictures and DreamWorks Pictures, presenting Munich, a new film directed by Steven Spielberg, in theaters everywhere, January 6th. And from the Ford Foundation, a resource for innovative people and institutions worldwide, on the web at fordfound.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Now that I love a girl and a ruby is her name. Hear me talking now.
Coming up, we continue our conversation with singer Dion, and critic-at-large John Powers considers the new film Brokeback Mountain.
Whoa!
This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, filling in for Terry Gross. Today we're listening back to an interview and concert Terry recorded in 2000 with Dion, the former teen pop idol. His new album, Bronx in Blue, is a collection of country and blues songs. He also plays guitar on the album.
Some folk feel like this, some folk feel like that. But what the way I feel, well, don't you call me fat, because I'm built for comfort. I am built for speed. I got everything, baby, all of you little girls need. Some folk, soft for breathing sound.
if you want me, baby, you got to take your time, because I'm built for comfort. I'm built for speed. I got everything, little girl, you little girl need. Whoa, baby.
Dion had his first hit, I Wonder Why, in 1958 with the doo-wop group The Belmonts, named after Belmont Avenue in the Bronx neighborhood where they lived. His other hits included Where or When, Donna the Prima Donna, Run Around Sue, The Wanderer, and Abraham, Martin, and John. When we left off, Dion was telling Terry about how his life changed when he went on tour with Buddy Holly and Ritchie Valens. It was on that tour that Holly, Valens, and the Big Bopper died in a plane crash. And it was around that time that Dion started thinking about what it was like to leave his old neighborhood where his music was rooted.
The music that you started performing when you were young was so much a part of your neighborhood, both the people you started performing it with initially and the kind of sound that it was. And then you became really famous, and when you become famous, you might become a hero in your neighborhood, but you're also separated from the people because you're living in a different world. Suddenly you have money, you have fame, you have different kinds of friends, you have professional connections.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. But there's a part of me that never left the... my neighborhood... my upbringing became more important and more valuable to me as I got older. I appreciate the people, even the priest who told me, like early on in my career when I was walking down the streets thinking I was the rebel king of the neighborhood, he said, "Yo, Dion, come over here, Father Joe." He said, "What's this rebel without a cause?" You know, that James Dean movie was out. He said, "You know, when you stand up for the truth, you really got something, you know." I didn't know what he was talking about, but he was telling, you know. But you see, he was the true rebel. He was the true radical one in the neighborhood. I didn't know that. So I had to, you know, these things you learn as you know. I'm glad I'm around this long, because, like, you find these little treasures.
At the same period when, you know, Buddy Holly dies, you start thinking more about the larger meaning of things, the direction you really want to be heading. It was also during the period when you were doing heroin. So I'm wondering if how the heroin connected or didn't connect with this sense of looking for something larger.
Well, yeah, you're trying to find something and trying to fill up that place in you that needs filling, and sometimes you go to the wrong places, you know. But when I look back on some of my records now, it's really funny. I see a kid who, you know, here's Chuck Berry singing about school, singing about cars, even though they were, you know, maybe weren't, you know, it was more than cars. But, you know, singing about all these kind of things. I'm singing like, I live in dreams, strange as it seems, love came to me. When I opened my eyes, I realized love came, you know. I wrote a song called Born to Cry that I say, what was I writing of it? What was I thinking? I mean, they're really heavy. They're not very light songs. They're very introspective songs. And I could see how I was trying to work out some of these things, and the music was a real, outlet for me, like salvation in a way.
Born to Cry isn't one of your more famous songs. Would you do a little bit of it for us?
Well, here's a song, yeah. I'd like to tell you all about the good and the bad. I wish today the world, my friends, would stop being sad. There's so much evil around us, I feel that I could die. And I know that I was born to cry. If I ever told you all about the things I have done, I don't remember having even one day of fun. The things I like and want to have, I can't even buy. And I know that I was born to cry. See, cry! I can't. I blew it.
That's great, though. While we're on the subject of these kind of deep feelings that you're having and trying to translate into songs, let me ask you about something that you also had to do it at the same time. Just the other day on TV, I was watching Don't Knock the Twist, one of the rock and roll movies with, you know, Chubby Checker, and it's all about, like, the twist becoming a dance craze. And, of course, you're featured doing The Majestic and The Wanderer in two of the nightclub scenes. And there's one scene where everybody's on stage doing the twist, and you're on stage looking like, what am I doing here?
Well, that's exactly what I was feeling, because here you have a scene where people are sitting at, like, tables in a nightclub, you know, all dressed up, and they wouldn't let you use any black musicians on stage. The white performers had a white band. Chubby Checker had a black band because the movie wouldn't get played. You go from south of Baltimore, it wouldn't get played. So, and all I had on my records were black musicians from the Apollo. They played The Wanderer, Runaround Sue, all those records. The guys like Styx Evans and Panama Francis and Buddy Lucas, all these great musicians at that time. But it was here you are. You have these really white bread guys on stage going do do do, you know, and you have these people sitting at tables. Meanwhile, the song, like Runaround Sue, doesn't look anything like it is, because it was born on the street corners, in the schoolyards, banging on cardboard boxes, and guys chanting. And with jeans on and with attitude, it didn't look like it looks like in those movies. So I still, when they have these doo-wop shows, I still get, what are they doing? They look like wedding bands. That wasn't the way it was. The music was street music, and it just looked so funny dressed up like that to me.
Former teen idol Dion speaking with Terry Gross. He has a new album of acoustic blues and country called Bronx in Blue. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air.
Donna, Donna, the prima donna, 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 the prima donna.
Broke my heart,
the prima donna,
where a
Donna,
think she's
Let's get back to Terry's interview with the singer Dion, recorded in the year 2000.
Why don't we hear Book of Dreams, a Springsteen song. Tell us how you ended up doing this particular Springsteen song. What was his occasion for writing it? How did you get it? And where does it fit into the story of your life?
Book of Dreams is such a special song because it's written four-dimensionally. Like, there's one verse about the present, one about the future, one about the past, and one about one that happens in your imagination. So it's almost like adult doo-wop music, you know? I recorded this album with all the same techniques and equipment I recorded The Wanderer with. It sounds like, being it's a soundtrack to a movie, it sounds like it was recorded in the 50s or 1960, and somebody forgot to release it. And so it sounds like that, but yet the lyrics just bring a little, pushes it a little, you know. So it has a little extra dimension to it.
I'm standing in the backyard, listening to the party inside. Tonight I'm drinking in forgiveness this life provides. The scars we carry remain, but pain slips away, it seems. Oh, won't you, baby, be in my book of dreams? I'm watching you through the window with your girlfriends from back home. You're showing off your dress, there's laughter and a toast. From your daddy to the prettiest bride he's ever seen.
my book of dreams. In the darkness, my fingers slip across your skin. I feel your sweet reply. The room fades away, and I'm way up high. Just holding you to me as through the window, the moonlight streams. Oh, won't you, baby, be in my book of dreams?
Dan, what did you mean before when you were saying that you used all the same equipment and techniques that you did on your early records?
Well, we recorded this album with tube mics and the same equipment that I used on maybe Teenager in Love, The Wanderer, Run Around Sue. It sounds like it was recorded right in between those records. We ran the vocals through the hallway. We used the same. That's what we did in the 50s. We didn't have, you know, we didn't have effects. So we invented stuff, you know. And we did it live. Everything leaks into everybody's mic. You know, back then, if you come into the studio with a band and didn't get it done, it didn't get done. It just had to happen. You had to capture that magic right there. So we went in and let it rip, you know.
There was a period of your life when all of your recordings were coming out on a Christian record label. You had gone through a spiritual awakening, were born again. And I'm wondering if that period when all of your records were on the Christian label, was that because that's the only kind of material you wanted to record, or is that the only place where you were finding a place to record?
No, it's what I wanted to record at the time. Well, I tell you, gospel music is very uplifting. It's great. It's just a lot of fun to write, and it's wonderful for the heart, soul, mind, and spirit. It's just great. So I was, my faith had come alive. You know, I grew up Catholic, you know. I would say I had a mild Catholic upbringing. But, you know, you see all these beautiful signs and these traditions and all these beautiful ceremonies, but you don't realize that they're a visible sign pointing to a higher reality. And one day, my faith came alive. It just came alive. And I just wanted to, you know, I've always had passion, and it always came out musically. It was one of the gifts that God gave me to express it. And so I always, instead of moaning and groaning and being in my concerns, you know, look what these people are, look what I like to be influential, affect change, at least through music, like a song like Abraham, Martin, and John, just to have people think about things where they could ask themselves the right questions. If you don't ask yourself the right questions, you're going to get stuck. So music is a wonderful tool to stir up some change in people's thinking. So writing some of this material for me was just, like I wrote a song called, remember that story I told you about Father Joe?
Yeah.
He said, when you stand up for truth. Well, I wrote this song. I saw the verse in scripture. It said, the truth will set you free. So I wrote this song. I'll do a verse.
Great.
Down the dirty city streets, with black top sneakers on my feet, I raced through early teenage years and dealt with all those nameless fears. Waiting as the school bell rang to drop my books and join the gang, in alley fights and stickball games where passing girls wore dirty names. Over my shoulder and back through the years, I can see my father's eyes
in my memory, telling me Jesus died upon the cross, all was won and nothing lost, and son, the truth will set you free. Yeah, the truth will set you free. You know I turn my collar, I comb my hair. My high school friends are all there. When two dimes made my pockets ring, I was a wealthy New York king. Being cool by the candy store, I knew my world yet wanted more. My high school colors of black and blue, they would disturb my point of view.
That sounded really great. Do you still perform that? Do you do any of your gospel songs at concerts now?
I just kind of do Dion music. You know, if one year I'll go out, maybe do two gospel songs. Some years I go out. I don't know. I just put shows together.
Dion, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Former teen pop idol Dion speaking with Terry Gross. His new CD of blues and country tunes is called Bronx in Blue. Here's a Hank Williams song from that album.
Hey, I left my home down on the road route. Told my pa's going stepping out and get the honky-tonk blues. Yeah, the honky-tonk blues. Oh, Lord, I got the honky-tonk blues. Hey, I went to a dance and I wound my shoes. I woke up this morning wishing I could lose the jump of honky-tonk blues. Yeah, the honky-tonk blues. Well, Lord, I got these honky-tonk blues. Got that blues. Oh, baby. In town, the city life has really got me down. I got the honky tonk blues. Whoa, the honky tonk blues. Well, Lord, I got these honky tonk blues. I'm gonna tuck my worries underneath my arms.
Coming up, critic at large John Powers on the new film Brokeback Mountain. This is Fresh Air. Ang Lee's film Brokeback Mountain has garnered strong reactions, ranging from wide praise to condemnation. Beginning in the 60s and spanning 20 years, it's a love story between two cowhands in Wyoming. Our critic at large, John Powers, looks at the responses to the film, including his own, and says that ultimately the film touches on something that's missing from most Hollywood films.
Ever since Brokeback Mountain won the Venice Film Festival last September, this gay cowboy movie, as it's lazily described, has become a cultural landmark. And not unreasonably. This is the first time Hollywood's made a gay love story of the old-fashioned kind, with attractive stars, swooning kisses, and wrenching farewells. While most gay viewers respond warmly to Brokeback Mountain, it has produced some unexpected reactions among those who aren't gay. Some straight critics have complained that there's not enough steamy sex, a charge they didn't level at Titanic. The critics at several Christian media outlets have, to their great credit, reviewed Ang Lee's film as a film, not as a culture war manifesto, praising it for its artistry and emotional power, even as they took issue with the character's homosexuality. At the same time, the movie has also provoked a response I've never seen before, one that suggests our culture's continuing discomfort with gayness. The media have been filled with pieces, including an op-ed by comedian Larry David, either saying, "I don't want to see Brokeback Mountain," or asking whether the refusal to go means you're homophobic. I don't know about you, but I can't remember an op-ed piece about not wanting to see any other movie, or anyone asking if skipping Memoirs of a Geisha means you're secretly a racist. Still, all these abstract arguments overlook the most striking thing about seeing Brokeback Mountain. It makes a lot of people cry. I've never been to a press screening that left more people in tears, myself included, and you can't go to this movie anywhere without hearing sniffling in the audience. For this is essentially the poignant story of how one of the cowboys, Ennis Del Mar, who's played by Heath Ledger, is so overwhelmed by fear and his own impacted emotions that he wrecks his own life and the lives of both his lover Jack Twist and his wife Alma. Here, as Ennis talks to Jack, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, you can see this wreckage in action.
What if you and me had a little ranch somewhere, a little cow and calf operation? It'd be a sweet life. You know, hell, Lorene's old man, you better give me a down payment to get lost. I mean, he more or less already said it.
You know, I told you it ain't gonna be that way. You know, you got your wife and baby in Texas, and, you know, I got my life in Riverton.
That's so. You and Alma, that's a life.
Oh, you shut up about Alma. This ain't her fault. The bottom line is, we're around each other, and this thing grabs hold of us again in the wrong place, in the wrong time. We're dead.
A story of love and loss, Brokeback Mountain is a real weepy, a kind of movie that used to be hugely popular, but in recent years has been viewed with enormous suspicion, even contempt, by a film culture that dislikes downer emotions, especially those thought to be girly. We may go to the movies to laugh at a cat flushing a toilet, or to be stoked by the spectacle of a huge ape on the Empire State Building, but people are embarrassed to go to a movie in order to cry. It's not hard to understand why. Unlike laughter, crying opens us up. It makes us vulnerable. Vulnerable to the derision of those who aren't crying, and vulnerable to vast oceanic feelings that can all too easily be exploited. But Brokeback Mountain isn't a phone company ad or one of those shameless movies like The Family Stone that seek to milk our emotions by giving mom cancer. It's a tearjerker that doesn't actually jerk our tears. Instead, like last year's Dark Horse Oscar winner, Million Dollar Baby, it takes the stuff of a potboiler and treats it with great restraint. The brilliance of Ledger's performance is that he suggests so much painfully burning emotion beneath his frozen surface that much of the audience does the weeping that he cannot. They weep for him, for those close to him, and, one suspects, for the many forms of sadness in their own lives. I find something deeply satisfying in such tears. A feeling of collective abandonment that was once a big part of going to the movies. And I'm not the only one. The desire for that feeling clearly remains. That's why, even though Hollywood makes very few weepies these days, the accomplished ones it does produce, from Titanic to Million Dollar Baby to Brokeback Mountain, take on a far greater resonance than anyone ever anticipates. In a world that's forever telling us that we ought to be cool, these movies tell us it's okay to feel something. They make it okay to cry.
John Powers is film critic for Vogue. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Roberta Shorrock directs the show. WHYY's executive producer of national radio programming is Elizabeth Perez Luna. Our theme music was composed by Joel Forrester and performed by the Microscopic Septet. For Terry Gross, I'm Dave Davies. We'll end today's show with a track from the singer Lou Rawls. He died this morning of cancer. He was 72.
They call it Stormy Monday, but Tuesday's just as bad. They call it Stormy Monday, but Tuesday's just as bad. Wednesday's worse, Thursday's all so sad. Yes, the eagle flies on Friday, Saturday I go out to play. Yes, the eagle flies on Friday, Saturday I go out to play. And then on Sunday I go to church and I kneel down and pray. Lord have mercy on me. Oh, Lord have mercy on me. Lord have mercy, my heart's in misery. You know I'm crazy about my baby, won't you send my baby back to me? Ooh-wee, crazy about my baby, won't you send my baby back to me? Oh, have mercy, send her home to me.
Support for NPR comes from Wellington Management, providing investment management for clients worldwide. From the Pew Charitable Trusts, serving the public interest through information, policy solutions, and support for civic life. Online at pewtrusts.org. And from the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship. On the web at kauffman.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, the unresolved legacy of emancipation and Reconstruction. We talk with historian Eric Foner about the period after the Civil War, when former slaves were promised equality and citizenship by the federal government, and the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the Constitution were ratified. His new book is Forever Free. Join us for the next Fresh Air.